So this is the letter. Dear Conservatives, I apologize. There is no way to avoid this moment, the formal letter of apology from me to Conservatives and to those who, quote, put America first everywhere. It's tempting to sweep this confrontation with my own gullibility under the rug, to, quote, move on, end quote, without ever acknowledging that I was duped and that as a result, I made mistakes in judgment, and that these mistakes multiplied by tens of thousands and millions on the part of people just like me hurt millions of other people like you all in existential ways. And I see that people are saying they can hear and see me. So thank you for that feedback. But that erasure of personal and public history would be wrong. I owe you a full-throated apology. I believed a farrago of lies, and as a result of these lies and my credulity and the credulity of people similarly situated to me, many conservatives' reputations are being tarnished on false bases. The proximate cause of this letter of apology is the airing 2 nights ago of excerpts from tens of thousands of security camera footage, of hours of security camera footage from the United States Capitol taken on January 6th, 2021. The footage was released by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, to Fox News commentator Tucker Carlson. And you can see all the links on my Substack page where you can read this. While fact checkers, quote unquote, state that it is, quote, misinformation to claim that Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi was in charge of Capitol Police that day, and I embed the link, a fact checker, the fact is that the USCP, United States Capitol Police, is under the oversight of Congress, according to the United States Capitol Police, and I embed the link. This would be the same Congress is under the oversight of Congress, according to the United States Capitol Police. This would be the same Congress that convened the January 6th committee subsequently and that used millions of dollars in taxpayer money to turn that horrible day and that tragic event into a message point that would be used to tar a former president as a would-be terrorist and to smear all Republicans by association as, quote, insurrectionists or as insurrectionist sympathizers and fellow travelers. There is no way to unsee Officer Brian Sicknick, claimed by some Democrats in leadership and by most of the legacy media to have been killed by rioters at the Capitol that day, alive in at least one section of the newly released video. The USCP medical examiner states that this officer died of, quote, natural causes, but also that he died, quote, in the line of duty. Whatever the truth of this conclusion, and with all respect for and condolences to Officer Sicknick's family, the circumstances of his death do matter to the public, as without his death having been caused by the events of January 6th, the breach of the Capitol, serious though it was, cannot be described as a, quote, deadly insurrection. Sadly, though the contrary was what was reported, Officer Sicknick died 2 days after January 6th from suffering two strokes. And there's the link. There is no way for anyone thoughtful, even if he or she is a lifelong Democrat, not to notice that Senator Chuck Schumer did not say to the world that the footage that Mr. Carlson aired was not real. Rather, he warned that it was, quote, shameful for Fox to allow us to see it. The Guardian characterized Mr. Carlson's and Fox News' sin weirdly as, quote, overuse of January 6th footage. Isn't the press supposed to want full transparency for all public interest events? How can you, quote, overuse real footage of events of national relevance? Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, Senate Minority Leader, did not say the video on Fox News was fake or doctored. He said rather that it was, quote, a mistake to depart from the views of the events held by the chief of the Capitol Police. This is a statement from McConnell about orthodoxy, not a statement about truth or untruth. I don't agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretation of the videos as depicting, quote, mostly peaceful chaos. And there's a link. I do think that it is a mistake to downplay how serious it is when a legislative institution suffers a security breach of any kind, however that may have come to be. But you don't have to agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretation of events to believe, as I do, that he engaged in valuable journalism simply by airing the footage that was given to him. And remember, by law, that footage belongs to us. It is a public record, and all public records belong literally to the American people. Quote, "In a democracy, records belong to the people," explains the National Archives, and I post the link. You don't have to agree with Carlson's interpretation of the videos to notice the latest hypocrisy by the left. My acquaintance and personal hero, Daniel Ellsberg, was rightly lionized by the left for having illegally leaked the Pentagon Papers. The New York Times was rightly applauded for having run this leaked material in 1971. And there's the link. I do not see how Mr. Carlson's airing a video material of national significance that the current government would prefer to keep hidden, or Fox News's support for its disclosure to the public, is any different from that famous case of disclosure of inside information of public importance. You don't have to agree with Mr. Carlson's interpretations of the video, to conclude that the Democrats in leadership, for their own part, have cherry-picked, hyped, spun, and in some ways appear to have lied about aspects of January 6th, turning a tragedy for the nation into a politicized talking point aimed at discrediting half of our electorate. From the start, there have been things about the dominant Democrats and legacy media's narrative of January 6th that seemed off or contradictory to me. That does not mean that I agree with the interpretation of these events in general on the right. Bear with me. There is no way to unhear the interview that Mr. Carlson did with former Capitol Police officer Tarek Johnson, who said that he received no guidance when he called his superiors terrified as the Capitol was breached to ask for direction. That situation is anomalous. There is always a security chain of command in the Capitol, at the Rayburn Building, at the White House, of course, and so on, which is part of a rock solid, quote, security plan. And there's a link from DHS. There are usually indeed multiple snipers standing on the steps of the Capitol facing outward. I made note of this when I was researching writing The End of America. There is never improvisation or any confusion in security practices or in what is expected of, quote, the security plan involving, quote, principals, such as members of Congress or staff at the White House. I know this as a former political consultant and as a former White House spouse. The reason for a tightly scripted chain of command and absolutely ironclad security plan in these buildings is so that security crises such as the events of January 6th can never happen. The fact that so much confusion in security practice took place on January 6th is hard to understand. There is no way not to see that among the violent and terrifying scenes of that day, as revealed by Mr. Carlson, there were also scenes of officers with the United States Capitol Police accompanying one protester who would become iconic, the, quote, QAnon shaman, Jacob Chansley, and escorting him peaceably through the hallways of our nation's legislative center. And there's the link. I was oddly unsurprised to see the, quote, QAnon shaman being ushered through the hallways by Capitol Police. He was ready for the cameras in full makeup, horned fur hat, his tattooed chest bare on a freezing day, and adorned in other highly cinematic regalia. I don't know what Mr. Chansley thought he was doing there that day, but so many subsequent legacy media images of the event put him so dramatically front and center, and the barbaric nature of his appearance was so illustrative of exactly the message the Democrats in leadership wished to send about the event that I am not surprised to see that his path to the center of events was not blocked, but apparently facilitated by Capitol Police. A point I have made over and over since 9/11 is that many events in history are both real and hyped. Many actors in historic events have their agendas, but are also at times used by other people with their own agendas in ways of which the former are unaware. Terrorists and terrorism in the Bush era are one example. This issue was both real and hyped. Patriots, quote unquote, or insurgents, quote unquote, depending on who you are, entering the Capitol can be part of a real event that is also exploited or manipulated by others. We don't know yet if that is the case in relation to the events of January 6th, or to what extent it may be the case. That is where a real investigation must come in. But as someone who has studied history and the theatrics of history for decades, I was not at all surprised to see on Mr. Carlson's security camera footage, the person who was to become the most memorable, quote, face of the insurrection or the riot or the Capitol breach, escorted to the beating heart of the action, where his image could be memorialized by a battery of cameras forever. And now I'm going to do something that I've been told is quite untechy, which is to show you the image right there, rather than sharing my computer, which I can't do easily, having only one hand to use. There are other aspects of the January 6th breach that seemed anomalous to me from the start. I studied the relationship in history of buildings, such as the White House and the Capitol, to the US public. I follow the ways in which the public is either welcomed into or barred from these structures. In the media furor around January 6th, it was erased from memory that the White House itself and the Capitol too have always been open to US citizens and foreign visitors. The interior of the Capitol is open to the public. These are public buildings. The US government website, visitthecapitol.gov, explains that anyone can watch Congress in session. Tickets to the gallery are available from one's representative. You can also enter the Capitol, show ID, and visit the exhibition hall. Passes to the gallery are issued to foreign visitors right when they walk in the door, and there's the link. Massing peacefully at the Capitol and other public buildings, and indeed entering the Capitol to observe the legislators at work, is part of our rights and inheritance as citizens. And this use of our First Amendment right to assemble has a long history. The gallery, the upper balcony that surrounds the legislative action, was constructed in 1857 in order to allow the public to watch their legislators and to listen to debates. Even before they had a vote, women had recourse to a, quote, ladies' gallery, end quote, and African Americans also joined observers in the gallery after Reconstruction. Newly enfranchised African American citizens thronging the interior of the Capitol building after Reconstruction were depicted in Frank Leslie's periodical. And there you can see crowds and crowds and crowds of citizens entering the Capitol when they had been enfranchised. In 1876 and 1877, massive, raucous public crowds thronged the gallery to observe the outcome of a contested election between Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel J. Tilden. And there you can see the crowds in the upper gallery, crowds of the public, pressing in peacefully to observe the proceedings. But they were supposed to be observing the proceedings, is the point. This above is the Electoral Commission of 1877, with the public crowding the gallery as the outcome of the contested Rutherford Tilden presidential election was decided. And there's the link. January 6th narrative by the Democrats in leadership is a departure from our history and from our Constitution in messaging to the nation the novel theme that the public is categorically forbidden to enter the Capitol and that the Capitol is the province of legislators alone. That is simply not true. The Capitol is not a sealed space exclusively for legislators, but it is one that is supposed to, indeed was constructed to, welcome and host the public in an orderly way. We should not be encouraged to forget this. Indeed, inaugurations themselves have been open public events in which the US citizenry simply entered the building for the celebration. This tradition lasted from President Jefferson's inauguration in 1801 to 1885. Things got very chaotic indeed in 1829. And I have a long quote there about the absolute chaos in the White House in 1829 at Jackson's swearing-in ceremony. And I have the link. Inaugurations were not the only occasions in which US citizens approached or entered their public buildings in Washington. And by the way, I'm not endorsing chaos. When I go back and look at these examples of historic events that show that the Capitol and the White House have always been open to citizens. I'm just noting that this is our history. They're open to citizens because they're public buildings and we're a republic in which the citizens are supposed to observe what their legislators are doing. The bonus army, which massed in the summer of 1932 during the Depression to claim the financial bonus promised to veterans who had served in World War I, is an example of citizens assembling peaceably at the Capitol. When I was an undergraduate, we were taught that the bonus army sat on the steps of the Capitol and lobbied the legislators who were entering and leaving the building. I remember from my history textbook images of crowds seated on the Capitol steps. Here, I don't know if you can see that, but there are massive, massive crowds there in 1932. Quote, more than 25,000 veterans and their families traveled to Washington, D.C. to petition Congress and President Herbert Hoover to award them their bonus immediately. And I have a couple of paragraphs there about how they sat on the steps, lobbied legislators coming and going, and there was outrage in the nation when tear gas and tanks and saber-wielding cavalry drove the marchers out of Washington and burned their camp. I also mention the massing of the bonus army on the Capitol steps in 1932 to note that the dominant narrative around January 6th today often implies that it is an act of violence or of, quote, insurrection simply to march en masse peacefully to the Capitol. But we should be wary of allowing history to be rewritten so as to criminalize peaceful, constitutionally protected assembly at the People's House. And there you can see an image of the bonus marchers literally, you know, sitting on the steps right up to the entrance of the Capitol. And you can see that aisle there in the middle where the legislators kind of had a path to come and go, but they had to face these peaceful protesters day after day as they were coming and going to do the people's business inside the Capitol building. The violence of January 6th and its subsequent service as a talking point by the Democrats' leadership risks its use also to justify the closing off of our public buildings from US citizens altogether. And that would be convenient for tyrants of any party. Leaving aside the release of the additional January 6th footage and how it may or may not change our view of US history, I must say that I am sorry for believing the dominant legacy media, quote, narrative pretty completely from the time it was rolled out without asking questions. Those who violently entered the Capitol or who engaged in violence inside of it must of course be held accountable, as must violent protesters of every political stripe anywhere. But in addition, anyone in leadership who misrepresented to the public the events of the day so as to distort the complexity of its actual history must also be held accountable. January 6th has become, as the DNC intended it to become after the fact, a, quote, third rail, end quote, a shorthand used to dismiss or criminalize an entire population and political point of view. Peaceful Republicans and conservatives as a whole have been demonized by the story told by Democrats in leadership of what happened that day. So half of the country has been tarred by association and is now in many quarters presumed to consist of chaotic berserkers, anti-democratic rabble, and violent upstarts whose sole goal is the murder of our democracy. Republicans, conservatives, I am sorry. I also believed wholesale so much else that has since turned out to be not as I was told it was by NPR, MSNBC, and the New York Times. I believed that stories about Hunter Biden's laptop were Russian propaganda. Dozens of former Intel officials said so. Johns Hopkins University said so, and here I have a link. Quote, Trump specifically cited a, quote, laptop, end quote, that contained emails allegedly belonging to Hunter Biden, end quote, said, quote, CNN fact check, end quote, with plenty of double quote marks. And there's a link. I believed this all till it was debunked. I believe that President Trump's campaign colluded with Russia until that assertion was dropped, and there's a link. I believe that President Trump was a Russian asset because the legacy media I read said so, and there's a link from The Guardian. I believed in the entire Steele dossier until I didn't because it all fell apart, and there's a link from the BBC. Was there in fact an quote, infamous P-tape, end quote? So many other bad things were being said about the man, why not? And there's a link. I believe that President Trump instigated the riot at the Capitol because I did not know that his admonition to his supporters to assemble, quote, peacefully and patriotically, end quote, had been deleted from all of the news coverage that I read. And there's a quote from Bloomberg. Because of lies such as these in legacy media, lies which I and millions of others believed, Half of our nation's electorate was smeared and delegitimized, and I myself was misled. It damages our nation when legacy media put words in the mouths of presidents and former presidents and call them traitors or criminals without evidence. It damages our country when we cannot tell truth from lies. This is exactly what tyrants seek, an electorate that cannot know what is truth and what is falsehood. Through lies, half of the electorate was denied a fair run for its preferred candidate. I don't like violence. I do believe our nation's capital must be treated as a sacred space. I don't like President Trump. And in parentheses, I wrote, do I not? Who knows? I have been lied to about him so much for so long, I can't tell whether my instinctive aversion is simply the habituated residue of years of being on the receiving end of lies. But I like the liars who are our current gatekeepers even less. The gatekeepers who lie to the public about the most consequential events of our time and who thus damage our nation, distort our history, and deprive half our citizenry of their right to speak, champion, and choose without being tarred as would-be violent traitors deserve our disgust. I am sorry the nation was damaged by so much untruth issued by those with whom I identified at the time. I am sorry my former, quote, tribe is angry at a journalist for engaging in journalism. I am sorry I believed so much nonsense. There is no doubt that this is too little too late. However, conservatives, Republicans, MAGA, I am so sorry. So that is my essay of apology, my letter of apology. And we have so many comments. Let's see. Oh, many, 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 many comments. Thank you all so much for commenting. Jim Bilello asked, what am I going to do to use my platform to remedy these wrongs? And that's a big and hard question. I mean, Daily Cloud is nonpartisan, so what we can do is call attention to legislation that, and we've done that, and that's, I think, a really good thing to do, that makes sure that everyone in America gets their due process rights respected or there are penalties. And, you know, this is a nonpartisan thing. I went to Guantanamo during the Obama administration to point out that, you know, the worst people accused of the worst crimes in the world were being held without charge or trial, without due process, outside the rule of law. And, you know, if the same thing is happening in the United States, and I believe and understand that people are being denied their due process rights, we need to have legislation that makes it makes sure there are consequences if their rights are withheld, and that deters prisons, funding of prisons from supporting any prison that withholds due process rights from prisoners. You know, I'm open to other suggestions. What we can't do is engage in a partisan endorsement just because we're a neutral platform. But, you know, as a journalist, I guess I do also think that giving shining a light on anything that is wrong, and, you know, bringing anything that's correct that's been suppressed to the public's attention is an important part of what we can do and what we are doing. So I'm committed to that. I'm publishing this letter of apology on Daily Clout, which has about a million followers and viewers combined every month. And I'll put this live stream on Daily Clout, but I need your recommendations because it's a giant amount of untruth to start unpacking. And I need citizen reporters too to, you know, give us, write us blogs or articles that are well-sourced that say who, what, where, when, that use real footage that is attributed, right? Journalists can't use footage that's not attributed or that's just floating on the internet. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not aware of that. But, you know, I can commit my site to shining a light on the truth and, you know, without bias as much as possible. I can also, you know, I know that Kevin McCarthy has offered to release the January 6th footage to every news outlet. You know, I'm in line, you know, I'll run it. Let's see. I hear and see you. Good. Okay. Susan Ertelt says, God bless you, Naomi Wolf, and your genius husband. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The Lord will bring justice. Jacob Sharon was bring justice and good juju to the stolen election. I can't speak to that, but thank you for your kind words very much. And Jim Bilello sent me a link on Twitter. I'll listen to that. Lori Landon just sent me some smiley emojis, which I appreciate very much. Autumn Smith, hey, Autumn. She's a longtime friend of ours, a wonderful investigative reporter out of Michigan. And good God, very relevant. She writes, I got kicked out of Michigan Capitol for reading Supreme Court law. I definitely want to know more about that. Autumn Smith said, it's supposed to be the people's house. I just want to say something to what Autumn has said. And Autumn, if you want to write that up, send it to us. We'll publish it for sure. If you have video, we'll run it. This is not just something that affects the nation's capital. This is something I've seen in state houses across the country. State houses across the country used the pandemic to justify closing themselves off from citizens being allowed to walk in and observe the proceedings. I witnessed this in Maine with Representative Heidi Sampson bringing me into the Capitol. I got yelled at by the governor's chief of staff for being a journalist in the Maine Capitol with a camera. We saw it in Oregon. We saw it, well, Michigan is another example, clearly. And it's very, very serious. Every state house that I've seen has galleys, and the galleys are there so you can walk in and watch and listen. And we're being propagandized that state houses in general, in addition to the Capitol, the federal Capitol, are not open to the public. And we have to combat that. Autumn Smith should be able to go in and read Supreme Court, you know, law if she's being peaceful and not disrupting proceedings. I don't know the circumstances. Obviously, it has to be orderly, but you know, certainly for people to go in a peaceful way, you know, and observe the proceedings. It's very interesting to me that and I didn't know this before I researched it for this piece, everyone could walk in to the gallery, including people who had no voting rights, like women and people of color in the United States Capitol after 1857. But that changed after 1876 and 77, when there was a contested election and when people thronged into the upper gallery to observe the counting of the vote or to listen to the deliberation of the Electoral Commission at that time, when there was this unclear outcome between Rutherford Hayes and Samuel Tilden. So after that, they instituted this system where you have to get a pass from your representative. Of course, it's super hard to communicate with your representative often. Who knows who's going to get passes to the galley, right? It's no longer a fait accompli, a guarantee that you will get a pass to the galley. So I think we need to reverse that. I think the galley has to be reopened so people can watch in and, you know, walk in and watch, listen, record, you know, all the things. By the way, I was taken by a member of parliament into the House of Parliament. Same thing. I had a notepad and a pencil. I was told by the observer I could not make notes, you know, let alone record. So this has to change. We have to bring transparency to all the 132 democracies in the world, but start with our own here at home. All right, it's the people's house, says Jane Bilello, in name only. Yeah, I agree. We have to reverse that because it's not supposed to be a closed space. Thank you, Dr. Wolf, says Martha. I strongly encourage everyone to go to Congress and walk the halls. Stop by the offices of your representatives. I totally agree with you, Martha. Oh gosh, Autumn Smith said, I was tear gassed at the Michigan Capitol. Write it up. Again, I just want to make clear, we have to be orderly, you know, but if you were tear gassed for engaging in reporting or any other First Amendment protected activity, that should be illegal. And it is illegal, it's unconstitutional. Susan says, sorry to see your hurt arm. Thank you. You'll keep me in good health prayers. I appreciate it. And I apologize for the state of my hair because I cannot easily do my own hair or makeup right now. So you'll have to take me as I am. Susan Ertelt says, U.S. history is ruffled. Its future is bright. American patriots will make sure of it. I hope so. And that's one reason I wanted to have this live stream so we could all have a conversation across any lines that may divide us. Autumn says they've been blocking access to public officials starting on a municipal level in my town. You can't even approach your elected public officials. For sure, that's happening. We've seen it happen in our own small town in upstate New York. They're trying to do all kinds of sneaky things to keep people from following local legislation. They're trying to get around our local laws that compel disclosure of when there is going to be a law. They're trying to keep people from seeing the actual law as opposed to the draft law. You know, they're trying to like, I couldn't even find out where my local polling place was because they don't post this information anymore, even though they're obliged to by law. So a lot, this is happening across the country. And the good news is across the country, when we educate ourselves about what our rights are locally, as well as on a state level, as well as on a federal level, we can insist on ending that because they're behaving unlawfully. We have to threaten lawsuits, but citizens can do that when they band together in groups. And also just knowing, right? Like I told a bunch of my neighbors that my local town hall was trying to say that you had to like raise your hand on Zoom to ask a question. I'm like, no, you can go in, you can attend in person, you can ask whatever you want. And there's nothing in the regulation says there's a limit on what citizens can say or how long they can speak. So really get your local code, your municipal code, get your state law, about meetings. It's posted. You have to dig for it, but it's posted. You know, we'll post it on Daily Clout. Just don't let them. And now that citizens are pushing back, the evildoers in my town have retreated and are being more, not perfect, but more answerable for their obligations to be transparent. We've all been deceived. I'm going to take a question from someone new. Rosalie Grana says, our government has been captured by communists. The media are the propaganda arm for the radical left commies and CCP. Sadly, I agree with you. Bruce says, Naomi, what do you make of Chansley's guilty plea? Does it color your impression of the events that day? So let me be super clear. I believe in the rule of law. And just like I chided my former tribe on the left for short-circuiting journalism and the rule of law, I'm going to say the same thing respectfully. Leaders on the right haven't been, you know, it doesn't help anyone for the left to say everyone's guilty. It doesn't help anyone for the right to say everyone's innocent or to downplay, you know, real violations of the law, real violence. We have to have the rule of law in this country or we will quickly devolve into what we're seeing now with the defund the police movement and an absolute state of anarchy. So what I would say about anyone's guilty plea is, you know, the law has to unfold, you know, people have to have a fair trial. I hope the trials are fair. I hope the judges are fair. I cannot say, and I'm not going to say, I'm a journalist, right? I can't say who's guilty, who's innocent, what the circumstances are. I can tell you from having been in a lot of chaotic or conflict situations that it's almost impossible to know exactly what happened without a thorough investigation, including witness accounts. And I gather that, you know, witnesses are being intimidated, including comparing video footage, checking that video footage hasn't been altered, timestamping video footage, going through it, you know, moment by moment. Someone told me who works with video that it would only cost $1 million for the government to timestamp all that footage. And for them, that's peanuts. And that would, you know, help journalists tremendously in understanding what happened that day. But I guess I would just say, I don't know if he's guilty or innocent. I don't know if anyone's guilty or innocent. I know that justice hasn't been done and journalism hasn't been done. That's my focus. Okay. This is the plan to create chaos and doubt. Well, I agree with that. Okay. Lisa N says, if your words mean anything, it's been so hard for so many people who love the course. Thank you for your kindness, honesty, and integrity. I hold you in the highest regard. I do appreciate that. Susan says, pray, pray, pray. I second that. I literally think that is the only thing that's going to save us. Oh my God. Well, Autumn Smith says, when I was jailed for my First Amendment reporting retaliation, they let me know in the jail they could disappear me forever and never let me out. Autumn, write it up. I mean, that is super scary, but I know that we're in a time of, you know, petty officials acting like mafiosi. And, you know, write it up. If you're going to say it, document it, and that protects you. And you know, be careful. I mean, every journalist is scared right now in the United States. I'm scared. I married my bodyguard, you know, and I'm still scared. Okay, Martha says, you cannot force someone to hear what they refuse to hear, but you never know when your words will plant a seed. That is really true, Martha. And I think especially with things like acknowledging error, like I'm waiting for everyone who shunned me for being unvaccinated to apologize. I'm not holding my breath, but I do think when people, especially people who are public, you know, apologize for something they've done wrong, it does break up this kind of iceberg of stubbornness and resistance, or it can help. I hope this helps. And I hope other, I mean, I'm interested that Matt Taibbi and Schellenberger, his colleague on the Twitter files, are, you know, confronting some horrible things Democrats have done, and they're Democrats, you know, and saying, I was very moved that Matt Taibbi said in an interview that I saw in my Twitter feed, you know, we can't have a nation in which the media is just fostering hatred and division, and ex that's not sustainable. And they should stop. And like, it is up to us to kind of shun and condemn those who are trying to divide us and make us hate each other, because literally that is a play by our adversaries for sure. Oh, this is beautiful. Gretchen Garrity says, I would like to apologize for voting for W. Bush, Mitt Romney, and John McCain. Thanks, Dr. Wolf, for your essay. I truly believe you are a bridge between Americans who have traditionally been on opposite sides of the issues. I hope so. It would be interesting to hear why you feel you need to apologize for that. But I have to note, like, none of these parties are innocent. I wrote The End of America in the Bush era, because they were intimidating journalists, and they were censoring people, and they were sending prisoners to Guantanamo. You know, tyranny has no party, right? It just happens to be the worst evildoers are the Democrats at the moment. But, you know, the Uniparty has come together to condemn Tucker Carlson. So that should tell us something. Grace says, we do not have to wonder why the events are happening, since we know we have a captured person sitting in the White House. I agree with that. Allison S. says, my biggest concern is the double standard. If they close public spaces, it has to apply to everyone. The scary part is that it is not. Okay, the state house was broken into. I think she's imagining a hypothetical. What if the state house was broken into by trans rights activists? But I can't see the rest of her comment. Oh yeah, here it is. We're celebrated, even though they essentially did the same thing as January 6th. Did that happen? This double standard is tearing the country apart. I'm not familiar with the protest you're describing, but I do agree as an observer that protesters are being treated differently by the media as well as by the courts, depending on who they are. Like I was in Portland when downtown Portland was being set on fire, and I was there with a family member, and I was terrified. And I was also terrified because nothing was happening to them. And the local and national footage was like, well, this is really fine that everyone's expressing their emotions. And I was like, a woman indoors thinking, no, it's not. And I just also want to note, you know, in conflict areas, when the rule of law breaks down, it's women and children who suffer, and the disabled and the elderly. They suffer most. So there's nothing okay about the double standard that we're seeing around us. And really, there's nothing okay with defunding the police, in my view, and stigmatizing the police, which is part of the double standard, I think. We owe such a debt to these men and women who go into harm's way every day, as well as to our veterans. And it just is such a CCP play to have us assail the police for trying to keep people safe. I've got it on audio. Oh, Autumn, be careful. Okay, I mean, write it up. Gotta write it up. You gotta let me share with everyone. There's a really important thing. If you want to document something and have it go into the news stream, you just have to put it out there with your name on it, which I know Autumn Smith does, but I'm talking to everyone. Who, what, where, when, if not why and how. Okay, if it isn't identified, real journalists can't use it. So I'm constantly being, like, I was constantly asked, how could you be so stupid, basically, since I wrote this piece? Well, I saw plenty of clips that would have raised questions about the narrative about January 6th, but they were not identified. I couldn't assess them. I couldn't ask follow-up questions. Where was this taken? Is it real? Do you have the footage? Can I see it? What time of day, by whom? So there's so many deep fakes. There's so much fake news out there. If you want something to really enter the news stream and be dealt with, please identify it. Okay. Devin Graham says, we must know the level of federal involvement in the events of January 6th. There were agent provocateurs who facilitated the breach of the Capitol. Thank you for what you do, Dr. Wolf. And Devin, I agree that we have to know. And again, if this was a Greenpeace march that was infiltrated by violent protesters, people would be asking those questions, especially of a Republican administration. And I will also tell you, for sure, I'll just tell you from my own experience, for sure, they were there, because during the Bush era, about 20% of every crowd when we were protesting the Patriot Act was made up of agents and provocateurs. That was just understood and confirmed. It's been confirmed. Diana Beauregard says, how can we change the conversation in the public arena and start calling this a war? She goes on to say, Naomi, you are among the thought leaders ahead of the curve and leading the charge for all Americans. Oh my goodness, my friend. I've been calling it a war for a long time. My husband, Brian O'Shea, has been calling it a war. Bannon calls it a war. I think what I would say to you there is that people underestimate how influential they are. And we're conditioned to do that, right? We're conditioned to think, oh, I'm nobody if I don't have a big public platform. The thought leaders who are visible have to be the ones to lead the charge. Well, thank you. I mean, I'm doing this kind of thing and I'm going to keep doing it. And I worked hard to find a platform where I could do it, like StreamYard, where I could see comments and respond to them, because I thoroughly believe we need like town hall meetings that are transpartisan again. And we need to talk to each other with like honest facilitators who are well-intentioned again. So that's my goal. So I hope you'll join me here and on Daily Clout to do that and be part of that. And we can also start them. It's a really nice idea, actually. It's been on our list to start kind of transpartisan, friendly or civil conversations in local venues, in town by town. We can do that because we need to start talking to each other again in a friendly and constructive way and coming together as a nation. It's also quite revolutionary when people do that, because it amplifies the networks that people have to resist the takeover of this country, which is clearly happening. But what I was going to say is all of you, even if you're not, public figures on a gigantic scale, even if you're not public figures at all, I feel that you are each very, very influential, and that when you talk to your loved ones or your church or synagogue groups or your colleagues and have those conversations that you're scared to have constructively, I do think that's incredibly influential and important, even if it's super hard and scary. Let's see, how can we change this? We've been fighting against it for years. That's a tough one. I mean, I think we have to really turn away from legacy media and also captured social media and really bring the conversation to independent media and to non-captured social media like Rumble and Getter, and again, I'll say Daily Clout, and in person. Like I write in my book, The Bodies of Others, about how they tried to drive us out of public spaces to weaken us and to gaslight us, but that we're so powerful when we do something as simple as, like, I think it's totally revolutionary to just have a potluck and invite your neighbors, and just share your views, and make friends, because you You can share so much information, create such powerful bonds when you rebuild your community. So that's what I would say is the most important thing. That, and especially now that the banks are collapsing, you know, I've been warning about this day for a long time. Know where your food is coming from, make friends with your local farmer, you know, make friends with people who have the chickens, find out how to heat your home, sustainably, learn how to shoot. I say this in a totally nonviolent way. My husband bought me a 22. I'm learning to shoot, totally nonviolent way. We're moving into a time, well, we've moved into a time that I've predicted for a long time, when I said banks would drive you into digital currency. You wouldn't be able to get at your savings necessarily. Your communications would be hacked, or there would be grid problems with electricity and heat. Transportation would be made problematic. Look at the derailing of all these trains, and the food supply would be attacked. So as independent as you can be from all the top down stuff you're conditioned to need from people who can switch it off, that's the most revolutionary thing you can do. Paula J says, your apology is a beautiful exposure of what is humanity. I am also at fault for believing the war drums of our country. Well, I'm not going to judge you for that, man. There's so many lies floating around. It's so hard to find the truth. Bruce says, the powerful never seem to be held accountable when caught breaking the rules, particularly when they are on the left, regardless of who's running the country. What can be done? That's a hard one. I mean, I think you guys did a lot in electing. I mean, I'm a lifelong Democrat, so this pains me to say it, but it's good for our country that there's an opposition in leadership right now. And it's good that that pendulum can swing. So the most important thing I think we can do before 2024 is to clean up our elections. And Daily Cloud has launched a campaign to do that, to pass clean elections bills in all 50 states and federally. That's number one, in addition to all these kind of bonding with your neighbors, getting your food supply in order, talking to your friends, et cetera. I'm sorry, guys. My energy levels are not what they have been in the past because of my injury. So I'm going to take one or two more questions and then wrap it up. Gwen Johnson says, yes to clean elections and with integrity. And says RFK Jr. is putting his hat in the ring for 2024. That is true. That said, I think it's treacherous to run as either a Democrat or a Republican these days. I think we should also expand our system has been set up, and this is not what the founders intended, to channel people into the major parties and past the major gatekeepers, RNC and DNC. So I think we need to focus on also making it easier for people to run as independents and to be included in the debates as independents. Diana Beauregard rightly says, we as citizens can bring these charges to our local sheriffs. She's 100% correct. And on Daily Clout, we have two really great webinars by a lawyer named James Ostrowski about how you turn in your local officials, both for civil and criminal crimes, all the way up to the governor. And we should. I mean, really, the more disruptive, peacefully, and non-compliant citizens are with tyranny, the more we find out what our rights are, which are substantial in this country, still on paper, and insist on using them, the safer we'll be. All right, guys, this was wonderful. I'm so moved and grateful that you all joined me here. There's so many great questions we haven't had a chance to get to. So let me just say, I'll do this weekly. I'll send out the StreamYard in advance. I'll try to do it the same time every week. And you all can suggest topics to me as well. And then we can also launch on Daily Cloud and on my Substack a way for you all to, you know, have these gatherings at a Starbucks or, you know, in a church room or in some like neutral venue where we can find each other again as citizens. So again, I just want to close by saying I really am so sorry, and I'll do everything I can to atone for my part in having been deceived by lies And please keep in touch with me. You can write to me at naomi@dailycloud.io. You can send your blogs and your video and your bulletin board notifications for your community groups, your gatherings, your protests, anything we need to know to naomi@dailycloud.io or kate@dailycloud.io. And you're so powerful. And I know you will lead the charge peacefully to reclaim and regain our country. Thank you all so much. This is Naomi Wolf. You can find me on Substack. You can come to Daily Clout. Please do support us by being members or by donating. We need that support in order to keep bringing you independent journalism and BillCam, where you can find any state or federal bill. And you can also buy the Daily Clout War Room, I should say War Room Daily Clout, Pfizer documents, ebook on Kindle and also on Daily Clout, or you can get the reports for free on Daily Clout. And I mention this because we still are in the middle of lies from the pharma industry about the mRNA injections. And I just want to make sure everyone stays safe and healthy. And so that is a trove of wonderful information for you. Thank you all so much. Oh, Karen says, wonderful. I would love to meet up with people locally. And that is a happy note to end on. I'll make that happen, Karen. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care. Have a blessed week ahead. Bye-bye.